Welcome to Dark History Time with Brian. A few things before we get started. Need to let you know that you might find some of this material disturbing. We do use adult language on the show. Listener discretion is advised. Well, we are back again this week. I think we only put out one in the month of March. I apologize for that. But I at least did get you a episode on a serial killer instead of just throwing you dates in dark history that I had been doing for a couple months, coasting by on that. And I realized when I went back and listened to that the other night that I haven't done March or April's dates in dark history. So I might combine those two together, throw them in a recording either here in person with Austin or the way that I did them previous and fire them to you to put those out. That might be a bridging the gap type of thing. This will be the next one we put out. But then after that, buy me a little more time since I seem to be procrastinating on coming up with these cases for us. So I have a co-host today. It's my daughter, Cheyenne. You might have heard her previous. I don't remember. I don't think you've been on one of these with me. I think we did a Morbid the Macabre before. Okay. But so you will hear another voice in here. She actually brought me this case. I was a little familiar. I had heard his name before. I believe I'd listened to last podcast on the left episode on him. So I knew a little bit about him, but dug back into it last night to get some more research to present to you guys, and it brought to mind that maybe this will become a semi-regular thing because Cheyenne thought it was a great idea to maybe bring up some of these lesser-known outside of the United States killers, not our little homegrown psychos, but world psychos, and it's a great idea. I know some of the names that are out there, but I admittedly don't know all of the international serial killers, so it's a pretty good idea. And I was thinking for this recording, because this audience might not know you, what got you into this other than possibly me being your dad?
It was just you being my dad.
All right, fair enough. But something had to intrigue you enough to keep kind of with it. I mean, do you know what it is that draws you to this?
I guess the mystery of it. And it's the psychology, too, which is also from you.
Right.
I took a psychology course in high school, kind of in the same vein of, like, knowing more about, like, what you are fascinated with it. Like,
okay.
What fascinates you about it. And I like it, too. I wanted to go into criminal psychology and didn't do that because that's a lot of school.
Yeah, so. Well. It's not too late for you. It is too late for me, probably. Well, they say it's never too late, but I'm pushing 50, guys, so it's, yeah, I don't know if I want to take on courses. Plus, at this point, I feel like as much as I, not toot my own horn, but as much as I've read and talked to people in the field, they say, yeah, you're probably at least bachelor's degree level of knowledge on this stuff, so.
Actually, I think
there it is what it is.
It was Bones. It was Bones? The TV show Bones.
Yeah. I was going to say, I remember you. I had heard of it, but I didn't watch network TV. I remember you coming to the house one time and telling me that you were watching Bones, and we watched a few.
It was Mom's, yeah.
Yeah.
Show.
Yeah.
And I liked Sweets, which was the the criminal psychologist for them. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and then you have always been fascinated ever since you've been able to do your own research or cared to do your own research. You look at different cultures far more than I have, and I imagine, with looking into that and having an interest in this, they kind of cross paths.
Yeah.
And you find out about these guys.
I was super into Japan. I had my anime phase still there, but I have a lot of creators that I follow that now live in Japan, moved to Japan, and one of them covers, like, criminal cases, because she's just kind of converted over that, mm-hmm. over to that. And so I found out a lot of my Japan cases through her, and then just looked into it further.
I gotcha.
So it started there, and then now I just listen to people talk for hours about a bunch of criminals.
Yeah.
And that's how I found today's.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one we're going to hit today is Austrian, and I know probably next to Japan, Germany's probably your other biggest mm-hmm. foreign country interest. So there's that, and I mean, you and I have both known. I think I might have. Did I introduce you to Rammstein? I did, right?
That was you.
Yeah. And I think I had told you about their song. Was it Meintal?
Meintal.
Yeah. And that's, for the life of me, I'm forgetting his name right now. Armin, and I can't remember his last name. The cannibal. But anyway, Muse.
Yes, Muse.
Yes, Armin Muse.
That's right.
So we might hit on Armin at some point in time, and I knew about him, and I was mentioning to you on the way over here, the English have had plenty that we can certainly cover. You've got the West, Fred and Rosemary. You've got the Moore's Murders, which is Ian Brady and Myra Henley. Peter Sutcliffe was the Yorkshire Ripper. You got Dennis Nilsen, who we dubbed the British Jeffrey Dahmer, which is in error because he operated before Dahmer did. We just, it didn't, I guess, hit over here. But he's, if we do hit on him and we get around to talking to Jeff, or if you guys know about Jeff, you will see the similarities are pretty eerie. I mean, they're extremely, extremely similar. The reasons for the murders, extremely similar. As a matter of fact, one of the books on Dennis Nilsen, the title of it was Killing for Company. I mean, that's, he didn't like the idea of people leaving him either, and that was Dahmer's big motivating factor as well. So there's those. I mentioned Moses Sithole, South African killer. He was the alphabet killer. He happened to kill victims. Their first and last names started with the same letter, and that's how that whole thing came about. And I know other ones. I fear that I mispronounce his name, but what is it? What did I say it was? Isai Sawagawa, who was a cannibal. Yeah. I mentioned a mass killer in Australia. The reason for them having all of their gun restriction laws was Martin Bryant, the Port Arthur massacre. He went into I believe it was an eating establishment, and just opened up with an AK, and it was a mass shooting incident there. So there's plenty of stuff out there, but today we decided to start with
Jack Unterweger.
Yes, and she will pronounce it much better because she's into that than I probably will, so I apologize for butchering some of these names. Hopefully I don't do a terrible job, but I am a ignorant American, so that's what happens to us with languages, I think. So Jack was actually born August 16th, 1950 in Austria as Johann Unterweger, correct?
Yes, correct.
And life wasn't great from the get-go. I've looked at a number of sources. Some say his mom was a prostitute. Some say she was just a criminal. So either way, she was out of his life by the time he was three. She was incarcerated. And he went to live with his grandfather, who was not a good guy either. A lot of sources say he was a drunk, but he did like to steal farm animals, and he enlisted Jack in that enterprise early on. Between the years of 1966 and 1974, you'll notice 1966 is when he's 16 years old, he had been convicted 16 times, mostly for theft-related offenses, but also for pimping and sexual assault on a sex worker. He spent most of that eight-year period of time incarcerated. And then he steps up.
Yeah, but I did want to say that the source that I got some of my info from said mm-hmm. that his grandfather would just push all of the stealing crimes onto him. His grandfather would flee, and then Jack would be left behind to take the fall for the animals.
I wonder if some of that was thinking, hey, it's a juvenile, so it won't be as big of an offense for him, or probably. Big a penalty. That happens, as most of the listeners probably know. I mean, that's why a lot of the, especially early on in the crack epidemic and all the pushers, that's why you had all the little kids on the street corners doing the selling on the streets, because they're going to get a juvenile sentence. They're not going to get adult sentences. Mafia has done it. Everybody's made use of juveniles.
Yeah, so he's just building up that record.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really early on.
Yeah, really early on.
Yeah, in 1974, he murdered 18-year-old Margaret Schaefer by strangling her with her own bra. He stated that when he looked into her eyes, he saw his own mother. Which can be linked to the whole prostitution thing.
Right. And, I mean, that was part of his defense was that he didn't say he blacked out. He just, he said, I envisioned my mom, and that's why I did what I did. And it was not accepted by the jury.
He was also in the company of, like, his girlfriend.
His girlfriend helped to lure this woman to the wooded area where the murder ultimately took place. I couldn't get if she knew that happened
or my was around for it. My source didn't say she knew.
I was going to say, the stuff I found said that she admitted helping him procure this lady, but it didn't go any further.
Yeah, because it was like her friend that she knew and was like, yeah, we can call her up or whatever and get her here.
Yeah,
but I don't think she knew what his intentions were.
Right. That was my take on it as well. So, like I said, it did not play with the jury, as they say. And in 76, he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison. He entered prison as an illiterate. And while he was in prison, he taught himself how to read and write. And he became quite a prolific writer. He wrote short stories, poems, plays, and his own autobiography. His poems were said to be so beautiful that they were taught in Austrian schools and praised by Nobel Prize winners.
And the kids, like, wrote papers on them as well.
Yeah, and this is what where the interesting factor starts. Because right now he's just a, I'd say, you know, poor kid brought up in a poor environment who committed an atrocious crime and ended up where, unfortunately, he was probably always going to end up anyway with the beginning in life that he had. So far, pretty standard story for Mr. Unterweger.
Yep.
Unterweger, excuse me. See, I knew I'd do it at least once or twice. So do you want to tackle those or you want me to tackle those? Two books that he put out while he was in prison.
I don't know if I can pronounce them any better.
I think I'd practiced the top one a few times. So I'm not going to, now that I'm on the spot, I'm not just going to say that I get it right. But this book won a literary prize in 1984. The title in Austrian is the Endstation Zuchthaus, which stands for Terminal Prison, translates to Terminal Prison. And his autobiography
is Fegefeuer, which means purgatory. And it went to the top of the bestseller list and was adapted into a movie.
So Jack's making a little something of himself with his writing and obviously getting noticed for his writing. Apparently the upper crust of Austria, as far as the creative artists, took notice of him. They thought that he must be a changed man to be writing all these elegant things and being so well-spoken in his writings. And they felt that he probably deserved an early release. So the elites of society started a petition and started a campaign to have him released as an artist and a changed man.
It was a lot of petitions.
It was a lot.
They were working hard to get him out.
I didn't take down the name, but one of them was a Nobel Prize winner that was on his side. And I mean, big names in Austrian society were taking up his cause. I don't know if you want to. What they didn't, apparently, Cheyenne and I talked about this in the car on the way here. I don't know if this was infatuation blindness or if this was just them thinking it's part of his writing and part of what makes him so raw. But a few of the things that he had to write probably should have ticked a couple red flags that maybe he wasn't a reformed person.
He's definitely projecting in his poems. The first one is, no theme is more poetic than the death of a beautiful woman.
That's got to make you think a little bit. Yeah.
Especially with the trend that will follow his release.
Exactly, exactly.
And the second is, you still seem strange and distant, and lively death. What is that?
Yep.
Yes, okay. But one day you will be close and full of flames. Come, lover, I am there. Take me, I am yours.
Which is kind of cool, but you're talking to death as being your lover and being somebody that you intend to bring closer at some point in time. So, yeah. Despite these writings, the campaign did work. And in May of 1990, after serving the minimum of 15 years, he was released. And upon his release, the prison governor, as they call them over there rather than your warden, declared that we will never find a prisoner so well prepared for freedom. Mr. Unterweger is well on his way to becoming a literary luminary. Hey, how about that alliteration? Yeah. How about that? So, as after prison, he goes on to
Host TV shows that discussed criminal rehabilitation because they thought he was just the poster child for this. Mm-hmm. And worked as a reporter for, is that ORE?
ORF.
ORF. Austrian Broadcasting Corporation, an Austrian national public service broadcaster.
Yes.
So he was just doing great things right on out of the gate.
Yeah, he is an hourly reporter for the national public service station. And
However, in September 1990, near Prague, Prague, okay, mm-hmm. Czechoslovakia, the body of Blanka Bakova,
she was 30 years old.
Yep. was discovered covered in leaves with her stockings knotted around her neck. So we have a bra, and now we have stockings.
Yes. And you will find quickly this is a theme, which...
Trademark.
sticking with the psychological terminology, for those of you that are into... how they classify some of these things with the FBI classifications and terminology. Everybody used to know the MO, the modus operandi, which is how the crime was committed. Strangulations, stabbing, shootings. That's the mode of operation. The behavioral sciences folks, when they started getting their programs up and running and interviewing and understanding how these minds worked, that's when the idea of signature came about. The difference being a signature of the crime is not something that is necessary to complete the act, but it is something psychologically that person has to do to complete the act in their mind. It doesn't have anything to do with how the death is brought about. It is not necessary to bring about the death, but it is necessary for them, in their mind, to perform this. So the idea of undergarments being used and tying the knot, that has a little bit of both. Obviously, that's the mode of operation, but the knot becomes a big deal. It's a certain, I don't even know what it was called, but they continuously refer to it as a very intricate, very noticeable knot. So
it's a slip knot of sorts.
Yeah.
What I got.
Yeah, I was going to say, from what you can tell, yeah, it must be, and you'll, by the end of the story, you'll figure out why it was probably that kind. That was September of 1990 in Czechoslovakia. Several weeks later, Brunhilde Maser, who's 39 years old, was reported missing. That's in, that's back in Austria. And 2 months later, early December of 1990, Heidi Marie Hammerer, 31 years old, she went missing and was found on New Year's Eve, covered with leaves, strangled with her stockings.
A few days later, the badly decomposed body of Brunhilde Maser was found, or Muser, was found in the woods. And then on March 7th, 1991...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Elfriede Schrumpf?
Shrimp? I'm trying. The only way I even thought of that one is, here again, being an old guy and watching the NBA, there was Detlef Schrempf from over there that was a big-time NBA star, and that's exactly how he spelled it, so I just...
That's probably right. I think I remember hearing that in my research as well. She was 35. She disappears, and then on October 5th...
It was her body.
Her body was found in the woods, covered with leaves, assuming still wrapped in her own stockings.
Yeah, it didn't. Some people some of the sources said the bra, some of them said the undergarments, nonetheless, always something that they had on their body. He didn't bring, he wasn't somebody that brought his little kill kit or his methods of killing people. And if there's a couple stops and starts here, guys, it's because I wrote my notes with just my eyes in mind, not Cheyenne. So they're a little sloppier than they would be if I knew they were for somebody else's consumption. Yeah. And that's, I
came
apologize.
Less prepared.
Yeah. You came up with the idea. You knew, you know, the nuts and bolts. She didn't realize I dug this deep into things. She hasn't been keeping up on my podcast, and that's on her. But
it's completely on me. I thought about it. It's in my Spotify recommended as a new episode, and I'm like, I think I have time, maybe.
But in your defense, I did get by a whole lot the last few months on just the dates and histories, which doesn't require a whole lot. So to actually do an episode on somebody, that's the first one I've done. So that would give you an idea. And I don't think you've ever really been privy to my research and stuff. I mean, I know our first big road trip that you and I took, I think you were 8 years old. I don't think you knew how much went into that. I mean, I plan this shit out, and it's,
I've seen your maps. You used to print off all of the cemetery maps.
Yep.
You had physical maps for places that were demolished.
Yeah.
You had coordinates. You had it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's always been my thing. I hate the idea of starting research, and that's why I drag my feet on it. But once I get into it, man, it's a whole different high. It really is for me. I get way into it. It makes me want to go to these places.
It's called the rabbit hole for a reason.
Yeah, just keep, I suppose so.
Going and going. And that's how I found a lot of the stuff that I know about. And it's just like little information, but like anything with me, it just gets thrown in my brain somewhere, and then I just randomly have that info for the rest of my life for no reason.
Yep. Yeah. I wish we could delete things out of our memory sometimes that we don't need anymore.
Like clean it out.
Yeah. And get more space in there. But if you've been paying attention as you listened, post-prison sentence, a victim in Czechoslovakia, and now we are back to Vienna, Austria, where four more sex workers vanished all within a month's time. Sylvia, hell, I can't even read my own writing. Zagler, who was 23. Sabine Maltzi is 25. Regina Prim, 32 years old. And Karen, I'm going to butcher this one, I know I am, Roglu Schladki is 25 years old. Maltzi's body, I believe, was the first one that ended up being found May 20th of 1992, followed shortly afterwards by the discovery of Roglu's body. Both were in the woods, strangled with an article over their own clothing, and covered in leaves.
He's a real pro at hiding things.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Because I didn't put on here that the vast majority of these findings, when the bodies were found, they were skeletal remains. So it had been a while out in the woods. You've got your predation and everything else going on that helps. I don't know much about the climate, the weather factors in Austria. I believe they're pretty close to ours as far as the seasons and temperatures go. And this is in springtime. So I imagine they brought about
This is springtime?
Yeah, because well,
it was December for the last one.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. No, found in May. So yes.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it would.
Yeah, found in May. So found approximately 5 months after disappearances. 5 months is a pretty decent amount of time to be in the woods. And
from what I do, it takes about 3 for animals.
Yeah.
In a contained environment. So.
Right. Plus, I mean, you got all that. You got all your. I keep wanting to say carnivores, and it's not
scavengers.
Carnivores. Scavengers coming about and do their thing. So, and this is where the reason Shai brought me this case is she's like, it's a wild ride. We've had a decent ride so far, but then we get into, he's still got his semi-celebrity status.
Oh, yeah. Doing all these killings, he's still holding a professional job, working closely with essentially the government for a little while.
Yep.
He was writing writing reports on the murders for ORF as a reporter. So he sat there and reported on his own murders.
Yep. Even going so far as to interviewing the Vienna's chief of police, wrote newspaper articles about the deaths, criticizing the police for lack of leads and how they were handling the investigation. And his apparently sparkling reporting leads to a different hiring by an Austrian magazine
yeah.
in 1991.
To write about crime in L.A. and the differences between the U.S. and European attitudes about sex work. Because at this time, all prostitution in Austria is completely fine. It's sanctioned and everything.
As it probably should be worldwide.
Yeah. And
my two cents. We've had this yes. conversation before.
In one of the things that I was listening to, he even commented on it. That it's such a, when he went over to America, that it's mm-hmm. such a taboo for them, and he really didn't understand why.
Yeah. If you guys, I think if you've listened to me long enough, you know I'm also into movies and music, and the thing that has always been, especially Europeans in European films, lots and lots and lots of nudity and sex. Very little in-your-face violence. They have always found it so strange that Americans have such a huge hang-up about nudity and sex, but absolutely no hang-ups about the violence we portray in our films. It's a complete 180 over there. They shy away from the violence, and we'll show you nudity. And so, yeah. And I know that Austin and I have talked about it, and I think it was probably on one of the episodes that just legalize sex work.
That's a whole other can of worms. Yeah, I totally think it's fine.
But if it's regulated, it's adults doing adult things. It's definitely another can of worms that could be opened because there are people in that industry that are not there by their own, by their own
volition.
Will and volition. But yeah, topic for another day.
Yeah.
So he gets that. He gets hired by that Austrian magazine, which I thought that I had written down somewhere, but maybe I didn't. I think it was simply titled, never mind. I'm getting it confused with the one that he talks to later on. My apologies. So he gets that sent to LA, and while he's there, he even secured a ride along with LAPD, took pictures with numerous officers. He was in LA for about 5 weeks.
Yeah, making friends too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Making friends in that whole world. But during that time, he killed another 3 women. Shannon Fexley?
Exley,
okay.
Yep, sorry.
Irene Rodriguez and Peggy Jean Booth.
Who was also apparently known as Sherry Ann Long. These are 3 sex workers in the L.A. area that during Jack's time in L.A. were found murdered.
Yep. Once again, all between the ages of like 35 and 25. So.
Yep. Yeah, he's got his picks.
Of course, they were all found dead, strangled with their own undergarments, and nobody is linking it to him yet.
No, because, I mean, as far as they know, he's just a foreign correspondent. And here again, I know I've talked about this in previous episodes. I shouldn't say for better or for worse, because it's all for the worse. Sex workers are deemed not as important. When they're found murdered, the general attitude, especially in the 80s and 90s, and hell, probably going back to the 60s, the general feeling in law enforcement was that's going to be the natural outcome of their lifestyle choice anyway. So why put a ton of time and effort into investigating it when that was probably what was going to happen in the long run anyway? It's dead ass wrong, but that is the way it was, and they didn't put a whole lot of time and effort into it. So I don't know what kind of coverage took place then, but I imagine it, they were just chalked up as another prostitute murder, and nothing much was thought about it. So after his time in L.A., he returns to Austria, where I couldn't figure out how he had this contact, if it was somebody in the media, if it was somebody in law enforcement, how he came about him, but somebody that he knows let him know that, hey, law enforcement found some evidence that links you to Blanka Bakova. They found some hair of hers in his front seat of his car, as well as Cheyenne brought this up, and I didn't write it down, and I don't know. I believe she was also the one that had some red threads.
Yeah.
I believe she was the victim that also had some red threads that they found on her.
That's can't confirm if it's that victim right. or not, but...
One of the victims, because he left very, very little to no materials of evidentiary value on any of them. He left really nothing to tie him to them, except those red threads that were a part of...
A scarf!
that he apparently... continued to wear all the time.
He kept a hold of it. I don't remember if they found him wearing it, if it was in his vehicle or in his home, but he kept a hold of that scarf for whatever reason. And I mean, it helped.
So yeah, yeah.
It good thing he helped. Did.
Yeah, because there was not much out there to tie him to these things, and of course, with the discovery of that hair in his car, they were able to get a search warrant for his apartment. Where?
Yeah. They found maps of L.A., business cards of LAPD officers. Austria notified LAPD, who quickly tied Unterweger to the bodies found there.
An intricate tight knot having been used on all the L.A. victims, as well as the Austrian victims.
So they're starting to put the pieces together.
Yep.
They're linking his little artistic knots to victims.
Austrian authorities plug the details into Interpol, and they were able to locate that Prague murder having the same knot being used in that one, so they were able to tie that to him as well.
Yeah, it seems kind of like a ritual.
Yes, that's what signature is. Signature is essentially, it is good. Their ritual in their mind that they have to do to make the murder, I don't want to say worthwhile, because there's all kinds of motivations to them to do it, their signature / ritual is something that they psychologically, they have to do it. Mm-hmm. And it helps authorities to figure out, to at least tie them together. It doesn't necessarily, because of the signature, it doesn't help you figure out who it is. But once you have established a pattern and established a suspect, then if you can go back and say, okay, yes, he's done all these have got to be him.
Yeah. And then I wanted to say back when he murdered the three in LA, The person that I was listening to said, like, it's all just opportunity. So they're all really close to where he was at the time. Like, he didn't go far. He didn't really hunt. He just kind of grabbed whoever and did his whole thing.
Plus, it's even easier for him to say, hey, I'm reporting on this for an Austrian newspaper, blah, 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 blah. Present himself as I'm just a straight reporter. Probably got these ladies to go with him, not even under the auspice of using their services. Yeah. Probably just, hey, I'd like to conduct an interview.
And that's what blows my mind. Like, the whole case does, but the fact that they're not linking him to anything, and it's all around him. Every murder is around him.
Yeah, and I meant to write down this gentleman's name, because I'm... He definitely deserves credit for this. I'm going to look it up quickly while you tell them about what happens when he realizes that he's wanted...
So he fled to Miami, being a big fan of Miami Vice.
Huge show at the time, guys. I remember it.
And then an Austrian magazine is the success
that's the
name?
One, yep,
okay,
success,
so success
yep.
is the
that's
name.
That's the one I was getting confused with.
They offered him $10,000 for an on-the-run interview. They wired the money to Miami Beach, and the money exchange...
They wired it to a money exchange in Miami Beach, and at that time, they also made another call.
To immigration services. So it was definitely a trap, but a smart one. Because
it's a trap!
A smart one because he was kind of one for being known, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's very vain.
Yeah, he's...
And confident.
Very vain and confident. I mean, one thing that I'm trying to find this other gentleman's name that I remember seeing is when he was in L.A., to go back to that briefly, I think my audience is close to my age, if I remember seeing the statistics right, so you guys will know these names. Younger folks might not, but while he was in California, he tried to meet up with Hungarian-American actress and socialite Zsa Gabor, and she'd actually began her career in Vienna and immigrated from Hungary during World War II. He was turned away at the door by her husband. He said she was, I think she was out of the country at the time, but he had the... confidence and the pizzazz to just go right to the door. He also did the same with Austrian-American director Robert Dernhelm. He actually got him to walk and talk with him and tried to pitch the idea of his autobiography being turned into a book or into a movie.
Yeah.
And it's like it says in both cases, he just walked right up to their doors.
Yeah, and that was another thing in my research. They mentioned that he got all of his radio and like host things because of mm-hmm. he was like super charismatic, and everyone was like, well, you can't be a serial killer and super charismatic, which is not true.
Right.
Based off of a lot of killers here in the U.S.
I think we have figured that out by now, but
apparently not when he got hired for the Austrian stuff.
No.
They were convinced that he was just a perfect little angel.
Yeah, and the person that I didn't think this was the right name, but he definitely had a big hand in it, was a retired law enforcement agent from Austria who remembered the 1974 case and helped him tie it together. Yeah, after his release, where'd his name? August Schinner suspected him for the 1974 murder, but was unable to convince colleagues to proceed with prosecution since he was already in prison for a life sentence. So he had... I dropped the ball bad on you guys. I apologize. He suspected him of another murder that we have not mentioned, of a young lady named Marcia Horvath. And the reason he suspected that was, again, the way the body was found and using the undergarments to strangle her. He was never tried for that. It was never pinned on him. But August Schinner thought that was another murder that he had done back in the 70s. So when he starts hearing about the bodies popping up in the 90s, he realizes the parallels and tries to get authorities to act sooner than they ultimately did. But once they got on his trail here, Schinner's intuition proved to be correct, and he deserves a lot of credit because he tried to take it to him very early in the mm-hmm. in the murder spree.
Yeah, that was what I guess was funny to me in listening to this whole case mm-hmm. was it was a retired guy who had to be like, hey guys, this is a little suspicious.
Right.
Maybe we should look at him a little closer.
And I don't want to lose any law enforcement fans that I may have. I mean, I'll be critical of them when I think it's merited. And in this case, it seems to be merited that, unfortunately, a lot of law enforcement folks, once they retire, that's that. They don't necessarily want to continue to follow headlines or follow what the local PDs are doing anymore. I get it. That's the point of retirement. This guy did to continue to follow along, and he did see, hey, I could probably get him steered in the right direction. So he went out of his way to do that, and it truly is out of your way once you're retired. So, mm-hmm. so all credit to Mr. Schinner. So he is he goes to pick up what he thinks is his, I believe I read it was $100,000 advance for his little interview. He goes to pick that up and runs right into the U.S. Marshals. They were able to charge him with entering the country on a tourist visa without disclosing his felony conviction for his 1974 murders. That got him held while all the machinations happened behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And then...
Yeah, after a bit of wrangling between L.A. and Austria over where he would be tried, he decided that he would definitely go with Austria's trial, because in L.A. it would be the death penalty, and in Austria it was just life. So he was ultimately extradited to Austria with the idea of him being tried in California after his Austrian trial. On May 27th, 1992, he was charged with 11 murders, including the one in Prague. I wanted to get it right this time.
Yep.
And the three in L.A. He was found guilty of 9 murders by the 6-2 majority, which was sufficient under Austrian law at the time.
I'm going to let you finish because this is your...
Okay.
Because you brought the case. You get to come to the culmination here.
In June 29th, he was sentenced to life without parole. And that night, Unterweger hung himself with a rope that he made from his shoelaces and the cord from his sweatpants. And he used the exact same knot that was found on all 12 of his confirmed victims.
Poetic justice, isn't it? I have no... sometimes you want them to live long enough to be able to try to dissect them. I don't think there's much dissection necessary for Mr. Unterweger.
I feel like he was deserving of more of a punishment. Like, I always get a little frustrated
when they kill
themselves before anything happens.
Absolutely. But for him, I don't think there was going to be...
I think that was because the most interesting way to go.
Yeah, because of what we have been able to find out about his actions and just the way he carried himself and the flash and the pizzazz, I don't think he would have... He might have, if he thought there was absolutely no chance of ever going anywhere, which it was a life sentence without the possibility of parole, maybe he turns that into a couple other books and he enjoys the limelight yet again.
I don't want anything out of him. Like, I don't think he would have given us anything because he seemed too above that.
That's where I was.
At the time he was caught, he seemed above that. So I don't think he would have given us anything, but he definitely deserved more of a punishment.
And that's where I'm 50-50 on it, because I could see where it would go both ways. I could see that, yes, his elevated sense of self might have kept him from saying that, yes, I'm just at the base a petty murderer. But then I also see, yes, but my name could be all in all the books and the movies and the TV again if I start saying, here is my motivation behind it. And so it's 50-50 on him, I think. But clearly, but I think that question was also answered by him deciding that the night they take him back to prison after the sentencing, he kills himself day one. Not even day one. I mean, it's short of day one.
Yeah, he didn't even get a little stay.
No. So I think that probably speaks to the idea that he knew the gig was up. He didn't think enough of himself or apparently his crime and victims to offer any other further answers. He just went ahead and ended it because, being the vain piece of shit that he was and having his taste of freedom, I am sure the idea of spending the rest of his life in prison being a nobody was clearly too much for him to handle. It should be noted that it is thought that he had three more possible victims. The one that I brought up, that Mr. Schinner was pretty sure was tied to him, and based on what I know about Mr. Schinner, I'd say he's probably absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find where the other two of those three were supposed to have been and why they were thought to be possible victims, but based on how quickly he was committing these crimes, in the time frame, like we said, that one was what, four victims in the matter of a month period of time, something like that. So
all within a month.
Yeah. So you're working out to one a week. For you to think that he might have taken some extended time off between these murders, I don't think is reasonable. I think it's far more reasonable to think that there's probably, unfortunately, bodies laying out in some Austrian woods that might never be found, or if they were, had been, not to be graphic, had been pulled apart enough that they couldn't tell that there was a ligature marks or ligature around the neck. Any of you guys that listen that are into Bundy know that happened with Bundy. Told him where a number of his dump sites were on Taylor Mountain, and they went to these sites and were able to find very minimal amount of bones because they had been carried off and carried so far away. And originally, when they found just heads and not bodies, they thought it was weird, but they thought that the animals probably separated the skulls from the bodies and drug them to that place. No, Ted was cutting their heads off and taking them home with him for a while, and then he'd dump them at a different time. So those things clearly happen. Just got done listening to a great podcast, Defense Diaries, on Gacy. With Gacy, a lot of the skeletal remains, they still had the ligature around. I mean, it's going to be around the neck bones. But obviously, if those things get separated, it gets lost in the shuffle. So there's that to think about as well. But that is the case of Mr. Johann Jack Unterweger.
Yes.
I try hard when I know how to say it correctly. I try to get it right. And thanks again for trying bringing that one to me, because I don't know how quickly I would have gotten on to him. Like I said, I had a passing knowledge of him, but I don't know that I would have hopped on him at any time soon. But I like the idea. I don't know if you do or not.
I didn't
run it by you. I like the idea of making this a semi regular thing where we do an international serial killer, or even possibly just an international incident that is tragic and crazy. I don't want to give too much away, especially if you dive deep into it, but you were telling me about one that's a Japanese case that it wasn't a serial murder, but it was just atrocious actions, terrible treatment of the individual. I don't want to get too deep into it because I don't want you guys to go find it on your own and then we don't have anything to talk to you
about.
So.
I would love to share that one, but it's definitely a gruesome case. Like kind of in the details. Like, you don't want to admit a lot of them, but it's a lot.
Well, here again, busting a little bit of balls for not listening to my most recent one, but I did.
I know, I'm sorry.
We do have the warnings on there, and I made sure throughout the last podcast episode to, before I got into the details, I say that I'm not putting them in there for the shock value. I'm putting them in there so you can see just how outrageous these crimes and these people were, and you need to be warned of that. And when we get to those segments, I tell people I have absolutely no problem if you hit that 15 second forward thing a couple times to get you past it if you can't do it, because the last episode on Richard Chase, he had a 3-year-old victim and and just what he did to the people is extremely graphic. But to illustrate his state of mind, I feel like I had to put it in there. I haven't seen feedback on any of the podcast sites or on my Facebook page, but I did have a listener who happens to also be somebody that's on my Facebook friends list send me a message saying how much they appreciated that episode, how... while I did hit on that, the compassion that I clearly felt for the victims and what they went through said that came through in how I presented that case. So I'm glad to hear that, because that's what it's... I'm not here for shock value for the sake of shock value. If we reveal these shocking details, if we go into some of these shocking details, we're not doing it because we're wanting to hold it up in your face and say, hey, look at how gory this can be. It's we're wanting to hold it up in your face and say, all right, what kind of mind comes up with and can do these things?
Yeah.
That's the question for me.
Yeah, for him that applies. For my case, it's more of just how much the victim had to go through. And to even stay alive for most of it is a feat on its own.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the victim didn't give up sooner.
And with that case, I mean, there again,
I love that we're like teasing this whole thing. Yeah. I honestly can't wait to do that episode. It's been a case that has fascinated me for almost a year now. I learned about it in June or July. So
nice.
Coming up on
a year. Yeah. And I like
it. It goes hand in hand with another one, but yeah.
Well, we're doing both. You got to tell me. She's going to have to direct me on this one, because I do not know anything about this one.
Yeah,
I was not even familiar with it until she started telling me again, and it was because she had told me about it before, but I don't know anything about this one. So that might be, there might be a couple in between, but I think, yeah, for the next one that we bring you in on, those will be the cases. We'll do those, and you guys will see. But I think it fits in, like you said. That was my motivation, is to show you what kind of mind went behind the act. Yours is, it's there again, showing what kind of mental toughness and willpower and that the victim's mind to get herself through the majority of it. So again, it boils down to mental makeup, I think. And there is that. So with that, we will bid you adieu. Like I said, I will probably throw out a quick little March and April dates in dark history to bridge the gap a little bit through April. I think we'll probably have this one hit Tuesday, if that's all right with you. Should work. Okay, we'll have this one hit Tuesday again, which will be... Forgive me, I don't have a calendar right in front of me, but it'll be the normal... Well, the semi-normal postings on Tuesday that I tried to fall into, but yes, the 29th. 29th of March. So we'll wind up your month with that. Give you... a week or two to digest this one at the end of March, early April, before I hit you with the dark dates in history for March and April. And If you catch up on this one and those, go back and listen to that Richard Chase episode. It is finally gaining some traction. It seemed to be a slow start, but now that it's been out there for about a month, we're getting it on par with the other listens. Please listen to all the other ones as well. I mean, if you want to skip the dates in history, that's exactly what they are, but I have done other episodes that I'd love for you guys to find. Total listens are now up to over 1,300, which is phenomenal. I'm very happy with that. I don't care if we get 5 or 10, but it's nice to see the numbers starting to come up. I know some of that's on me for my lack of regularity with getting these done, but we've hit on some things that have worked. I know I can record if I need to, and Austin can make it nice and clean. Our schedules are starting to sync up a little bit better as far as being able to get over here to the home studio. And Cheyenne, when she gets her schedule, it's usually at least a week ahead of time, so we can try to figure out a day to get her over here and do that as well. So thanks again. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, Dark History Time with Brian. Find us on any of your podcast platform that you might listen to. I know we're on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Anchor. What else am I missing? Who knows? I don't know. There seems to be a shit ton of them out there, but I know those are the big ones. So follow us there. And as I always plead with you at the end, write me some reviews. Send me some Facebook messages. Get in touch with me. Let me know what you guys are thinking. If you're enjoying them, if there's something you'd like rather hear me do, if there's a different way you want me to attack these things, whatever the case may be, I want interaction with you guys. And I appreciate all of you for listening and sticking with it through the irregularities. And yeah, I've rambled on now, so you can go ahead and cut off part of that.
He enjoys the spotlight. Don't let him fool you.
I don't know. It's a love-hate relationship. I always feel weird when I get recognized for things, but yet I want the material out there for people to be able to consume as well. I guess I don't know.
I think you're proud.
I'm proud of what I'm doing.
He's humble, but I think you're proud.
I am proud of what I'm doing. I think I fall into the to draw some more parallels to music and hopefully not go on another rambling little
tangent
here. I think I fall into the Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain idea of stuff. I want my work out there, but I don't necessarily be myself have to be out there. I think that tends to be where I fall. I want you guys to hear the stuff. I want you to be able to digest the stuff. I want you to enjoy listening to it, but I don't necessarily care if I'm a face to put to it. There we go. That's good enough. All right.
There you go.
A little bit of cleaning up for Austin to do around my stuttering and stammering and when I went on and repeated myself there at the end, but we got her done.
It's okay.
Love you guys. Thanks. We'll talk to you again soon.